Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to The Big Picture, folks. It has been a while. I know. Unfortunately, I kind of drop out of sight for 6 months at a time, and then I just decide, you know what? I'm going to come up with a new and exciting idea to bring to the world, and this is it. I was chatting with somebody the other day, and I was pointing out something on Facebook once again about what I conceived to be conservative hypocrisy, and my buddy responded, yeah, you know, I agree with your point, but at this juncture, I don't think pointing out hypocrisy is really going to do it anymore. And it just, I knew that was the case. I think I just needed somebody to kind of verbalize it for me. And then something else happened a few days later. I realized I do a lot of my ranting and raving on Facebook, and another friend kind of pointed something else out to me, the futility of it all. And I realized at that moment that it wasn't necessarily futile to do it, but it was futile to do it, to try to do it in a way that's going to encompass all of these people, trying to turn everybody's opinion all at once. And I thought maybe doing it one-on-one would be the best way to try, even if not change somebody's opinion, maybe just tweak them 2 degrees in a different direction and come to some sort of understanding with somebody else. And I thought this might be a great way to do it, the Crossfire way. And I was thinking about Jon Stewart's appearance on Crossfire a bunch of years ago, where he called out Paul Begala and Tucker Carlson for saying, "You're harming America for doing what you do." But I still thought it's worth an effort. And I reached out to conservatives. I put an ad on All Access, which is a website for the radio industry. And I said, hey, I'm looking for a conservative co-host. Let's donkey punch each other verbally all over our body. And we'll do it in a respectful way, obviously. But let's see if maybe we can come to some sort of understanding. I'll listen to you. You listen to me. You're willing to cede some ground. I'm willing to cede some ground. And, you know, like I said, maybe like that old shampoo commercial, I told two friends and she told two friends and so on and so on. Maybe we can extrapolate out from there. So my first co-host today, they're not my guest, my co-host is the host of the Malacast, the podcast. You can get it on iTunes. Also a contributing writer to the Daily Caller and in his free time, editor-in-chief of the Milo Yiannopoulos fanzine, Douche Nozzle. Just want to welcome Adam Mala. What's up, man?
That is an unpaid position, though.
it looks good on the resume, dude.
Yeah, but it's a volunteer thing. I just do it part-time, but, you know, there was a vacancy, so I jumped in. Thanks for having me.
It's a labor of love. It's a labor of love, dude, just like this. I understand.
Yeah.
So this is the way it's going to work. This is the format. I know we're kind of getting some house cleaning out of the way early. So we're going to have two topics today. I'm going to present one, and then we're going to kind of go back and forth a bit. Adam's going to do his. We're going to go back and forth a bit. The idea is to get your opinion out there, see if we can kind of change some opinions and come to some common ground. When one of us does acknowledge the other person being right or acknowledge their own opinion being wrong, you might hear this sound. It's just like an angel getting its wings. Every time one of us cedes a bit of ground and says, you know what, dude, I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point. You get to hear that. I'm not going to keep tally, but if I end up getting more bings than you, I will make a point of it at the end of the show.
I think that might be the last time we ever hear the bing.
All right, possible? So our first topic. It's a good chance, dude, but I'm pretty flexible. No, maybe not as much physically. It's more of a metaphorical physicality and flexibility.
I can't touch my toes. Yeah.
So, first topic, my topic that I wanted to delve into today was what I see to be the dumbing down of America. And again, I want to make this clear. I'm going to be presenting from the liberal standpoint, and I know that liberals do this as well, as I'm sure he's going to point out some stuff that he thinks liberals do that conservatives probably do as well. But just for the beginning of my introduction to the topic, I'm going to say that I've noticed this a lot more on the conservative side, that people tend to be making decisions more with their gut and with their brains. And I think this has been going on for a long time. I think it sort of started rising during 2008, 2009 when the Tea Party came and Sarah Palin. And conservatives for a very long time, I think, have been deriding formal education and higher learning and book learning, as Sarah Palin once called it. And I think it's reached its apex in this last election where people, conservatives, have been making, we'll use their voting decisions, based almost exclusively on the concept of fuck liberals or what's going to piss liberals off. And this is the sort of stereotypical person that I have in mind. So you have a rural voter, because a lot of people, if you look at the election map, it was mostly coasts were blue and the middle of America, the rest of America was red. I'm going to use the rural voter, a stereotypical rural voter. Jeez, rural juror, the rural voter. You have a person that lives, you know, out in the country, on the mountains, Appalachia, wherever he happens to live. He depends on a lot of nature for his life. He hunts for his food. He depends on the water that comes out of the sky going directly into a well. He drinks that water. His kids play up in the forest, in the woods. They run and they frolic. He depends on maybe low-skilled, lower-paying jobs that trickle-down economics aren't necessarily going to save. And when he gets into the voting booth, the only thing he can think is, that guy's going to let me keep my guns, and nobody's ever taken anybody's guns away. Let's be clear about that. Well, you live in Chicago, you may be a small thing there. But I'm going to vote for the guy that lets me keep my guns and fuck liberals. So he ends up voting for somebody with trickle-down economics who's going to poison the air by abolishing the EPA. He's going to allow fracking. He's going to allow clear-cutting of the forest in which he goes to hunt for his food. And you end up with a guy with no clean water, nothing to eat, drunk, because what the hell, I'm being stereotypical, no job. He's pissed off, but on the plus side, he's got a bunch of guns, but nothing to shoot at. So I think in many ways, and that's just my little stereotypical example, conservatives have really, I think this whole disdainful attitude towards intellect and book learning and elite universities and all of that sort of stuff has gotten so bad that they're making these voting decisions based on their gut, and they end up with somebody like Donald Trump, who at this point, I got to tell you, even though the election didn't go the way I wanted it, I was the first to say, let's see what he can do and let's give him a shot. And 10 minutes into it, he was acting like the same asshole he was during the election. And that's my rant.
So, do I respond now?
How about it, man?
All right. So, you mentioned he wants to allow fracking, this guy in the red states. Yeah, that's basically a use of the land that people in Pennsylvania would like to be able to use. In New York, they banned fracking. There's no harm to the water. The EPA has said there's not widespread harm to the water. People have been able to light their tap water in Pennsylvania for hundreds of years. The left has largely been lying on the issue of fracking to terrify everyone. The left used to be for natural gas back when it was really expensive. But what annoys the environmental left is when anything works. Then it became practical to use natural gas. And even though, as President Obama made the point, natural gas helps to curb CO2 emissions, that's why the U.S.'s CO2 emissions are down. President Obama has made this point, but the far left environmental base refuses to acknowledge that fracking is a godsend for the farmers who get to use their land so they can keep their farms in the family, even if dairy prices and other things are down. And it's a godsend for the environment. It's just good. Why is fracking bad?
I, from what I know, and I'm not an environmentalist or a scientist, but from what I've read about fracking, it releases all kinds of horrible stuff into the water. It destroys land. And that's pretty much the two things that I know. So, I mean, there might be other areas or other experts, so-called experts, because you can find a lot of people who say that global warming is not real, and you can find a lot of people that say everything's great for the environment, so let's just do away with the EPA. But from what I know and from people that I've spoken to and people who live in areas where there is fracking, it does a lot of damage to the environment, it does a lot of damage to the drinking water, and it does a lot of damage to the ground that it's in.
It doesn't do any damage to the drinking water. That's just
okay. Well,
fracking happens
you're saying
way below the aquifer. It's much deeper, and the EPA said this. So what source would I have to bring to you to say for you to say, okay, maybe the water's fine. Maybe it's still bad because it causes earthquakes. There are other reasonable things, not drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about this? We can agree to disagree on the fracking. Let's move on to the other parts of what I said.
Okay. I don't think, I mean, so you characterize the Trump voters as people who wanted to keep their guns. I don't think that was the primary issue, because I don't think that Hillary Clinton was going to take away people's guns. I think the issue is what really launched Donald Trump's campaign is the promise to build a border wall. That was the biggest reason why people got behind Trump, is because we were finally going to have a president who took American law seriously, namely that it's illegal to enter the country illegally. He was actually going to send people back. He was going to prevent, unlike Hillary Clinton, 65,000 Syrians who are essentially unvettable as they come from a country mired in a long civil war. There are no local authorities in Syria you can call to vet. You can't call, you know, the local department and say, did they live at this address? It's a civil war. Hillary Clinton wanted to bring 65,000 such people here, many of which have views that are antithetical to American thought. Like, they're not big fans of freedom of speech in the Middle East, for example. They're not huge fans of gays and women's rights. This is Hillary Clinton's idea, was to import 65,000 of these people, and Donald Trump said, you know what? I don't think that's good for America. It's great for 65,000 Syrians, but it's not good for America. Those are the reasons why Donald Trump won the election, and he's right about those things.
Okay, now to be clear, to go back to what you said about Barack Obama deported hundreds of thousands of people. No, I'm not saying he did it directly, but during his administration, if we want to assign blame or credit to a president who, depending on, you know, even though he doesn't necessarily have a specific control over it, there are a number of sources that will tell you that during Barack Obama's administration, there were many more people were deported than under the Bush administration. Second of all,
I'm not here to defend George Bush. I'm very mixed on Bush.
No. I'm not saying you are. But what I'm saying is, people point out that Hillary was going to be a lot of people said Hillary Clinton's going to be a third. It's going to be a third 4 years of Barack Obama. And I'm saying that wasn't necessary. And I think you also said that. I mean, I don't know what your opinion was on that early on during the election process. But a lot of people were saying voting for Hillary is going to be another third term for Barack Obama. OK, that being said, you said that we can't vet people coming from Syria. We have a pretty stringent vetting process. Now, I'm not saying allowing 65,000 people into the country from a place like that is the best thing to do. But I also believe
How can you vet them? How are you going to vet somebody from a civil war?
How do we vet people from any country that comes over? Somebody leaves. Let's be clear. Somebody leaves their country to come to America. Somebody floats over on a door from Cuba through shark-infested waters. Has Cuba – I mean, have we called Cuba to let them into the country? Because Cuba is like not – I mean, I know they're a lot more stable than Syria is. But somebody fleeing the country, what do we do with those people? People fleeing any civil war,
right.
What do we do? I mean, we've been accepting people coming from horrible situations for hundreds of years. Why is Syria specifically that bad? I know you pointed out that they have antithetical values to what America is, but I would imagine a lot of those people have a lot of the same values that Americans do, which is why when we go to the Middle East saying that we're going to spread democracy all over the place, sometimes a lot of people don't want that. And sometimes a lot of people do. So, I mean, it's going to be – I don't know the exact number. Let's say 50-50. Let's say 50% of those people really, really want to be in America. The other 50%, there's a percentage of those people that hate America and want to come here and blow shit up. And then there's another bunch of people that would prefer to stay in Syria. But, hey, like you said, there's civil war. I got to get the hell out of here. Where am I going to go? I guess I'll go to America.
Right. And my answer to you is how many – Cuban refugees have been affiliated with terrorist plots against the United States of America. If the answer is 70-some, as it is in the case of the people who have come from the seven countries that Trump banned refugees from for a temporary period of time, if the answer is 70-some, then we need to reevaluate. I don't have an ideological love or disdain for foreigners. The idea of xenophobia, I think, is a myth. I don't know anyone afraid of foreigners. I don't know anyone afraid of Irish people, for instance. What people are afraid of is they're afraid of people coming to this country who largely hate Jews, hate gays, hate when someone draws the wrong cartoon. That's what we're worried about, and we should be.
I agree. I don't necessarily think all of those people have that mindset, to be honest with you. And I also believe
not all.
Much. What was that?
What if 80% hate Jews? What if 80%? Then should we let them in?
What if 80%? Dude, I can find a lot of people in this country that hate Jews, but I'm not saying it's best mindset. I'm Jewish. So I don't really want a bunch of people that hate my people in here to begin with. But now you're giving a whole what if scenario.
Right.
What if? What if they don't? How about what if they don't? What if they don't?
Well, no, it's not a what if scenario. It's Pew has done polling on do you think that adulterers should be stoned to death in all kinds of Muslim-majority countries. It turns out Muslim-majority countries have quite astonishingly backward values, and we can all run around pretending that Syrians have the same values as Englishmen. They don't. Now, some of them, of course, are wonderful people. I completely grant that. What I'm worried about is bringing in tens of thousands of people that are horrible.
Would not be using Englishmen as a contrast to Muslims when you're talking about European anti-Semitism. I just wouldn't. That's just me. Now.
So if you were a Jew, would you rather go to any Muslim-majority country or England?
Oh, I'd much rather go to England.
Egypt. Okay, me too. That's because they have different values.
But it doesn't mean all of the people
English,
are bad. It just means they have different values. Now, here's the thing. Now, there are a lot of people in those countries that are... What was that?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you.
No, it's fine. It's fine. My point is, yeah, there's a lot of ass-backwards theology in Middle Eastern countries, and I'm not denying that. Now, I don't want to go too far back because I know sometimes conservatives don't like dipping too far back into history unless it's to talk about Ronald Reagan or the Founding Fathers, but we set in motion to say that a lot of these people hate America might be true. To say a lot of those people look at America and say, that's the place I want to be, might also be true, especially for a lot of women or for a lot of gays or for a lot of people who are of other, you know, they're not male, they're not heterosexual, and they're not strictly Muslim. Those people probably specifically want to come to a country like America. But a lot of the hatred that is directed at this country is because we've been shitting in the Middle East sandbox for a very long time. Now, whether it's warranted or not warranted, I'm just saying that's the case. And I think a lot of people seem to think, conservatives specifically, that these people hate us for our freedoms. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I get what you're saying about whether I would rather go to a European country or a Middle Eastern country. You're absolutely right about that. Hold on. Thank you very much.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, let's look at the big tote board. It's 1-0. But look, man, look, here's the deal. And I got to say this straight up. First of all, Trump ran on a we're going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it thing. And that's not panning out. Trump ran on we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And from everything I'm hearing, and this is just getting back to the whole idea of voting with your gut. Trump is a habitual liar. He's thin-skinned. He's a narcissist. And to believe anything this guy says, and I'm saying that straight up. If Trump had come in, eased back on a lot of the bullshit he was saying during the campaign, because look, now I'm president, I would be fine with that. I think it's not what he's doing, what he's saying, it's how he's saying these things. Now, they're not repealing and replacing Obamacare. They're walking that back, and they're repealing and repairing Obamacare. Okay. He said he's going to drain the swamp, and he's removing all of these, that act that was supposed to oversee the banks. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. He's removing a lot of the protections for investors now, specifically the one that says a bank or some kind of financial industry has to act in the best interest of its clients. So once again, stuff he's doing, stuff he said, is really screwing the little guy. And I'll use the rural voter again. I don't know how much he has invested in a 401k or stock options. But I think a lot of what they did and a lot of what they do and a lot of how they decide their future and their voting is screw liberals. If it pisses a liberal off, then that's good. Donald Trump pisses liberals off a lot, and to them, that's the only thing they needed. Now, we don't have a lot of time, so let's slide over to what you want to talk about, my friend, which is a fey British man who has been in the news lately for some of his more controversial views and something that happened in Berkeley.
Correct. So SFGate.com reported that Milo Yiannopoulos, this actually became quite a big story, but it's been almost 2 weeks now, on February 1, went to UC Berkeley to give a speech. And he was not permitted to do so because 150 people, a lot of them with face masks, did an incredible amount of property damage, over $100,000, it's been reported. And there were how many arrests? One person arrested. And so as a result, he wasn't able to give his speech. And what has the response from the left been? So some people, like Sink Igar, the Young Turks guy on YouTube, he gets many, many views. He's very popular. He essentially just made up that these people wearing masks could have been right-wingers. Just, you know, it's kind of like a false flag thing. So some people on the left, Robert Reich, for example, he worked in the Clinton administration, are just kind of making up that it's a right-wing conspiracy to shut themselves up. I think that things. So that the left doesn't have to face the simple fact that the left has a problem with free speech. Now, some people on the left love free speech. They need to stand up for it now when views are unpopular. And so what every left winger in every college administration all across this country is demand that Milo Yiannopoulos speak at their university. They need to give the man who was shut up the biggest platform possible to send a clear message to the anti-free speech element of the left that free speech is still a left-wing value. I don't believe it is, but they need to make that case by embracing Milo's right to speak. What do you think?
Here's what I think. I think that you make a valid point that these people should not have shown up there. I believe they are professional agitators. I saw a video of a woman from a group called By Any Means Necessary, a Latina woman, I can't remember her name, basically on TV during an interview saying, yeah, this is what we do and this is what we're going to continue doing. Milo Yiannopoulos puts Muslims in danger and women in danger, and we're not going to stand for it. We are going to resist as hard as we can. In regards to universities around the country doing that, let me tell you a quick story. I recently had to go back to college. I've always defended the educational system. They say that public schools are indoctrination centers for liberals and all this stuff, and universities or ivory tower, kind of the same idea, indoctrination stations. I went back to a college here, a UC college here, and I'm sorry, Cal State, to take a couple of classes to get a bump in my salary. It's the way the educational system works. I work in education. Long story short, I went back and took two classes, and I was absolutely shocked at how left-wing and unwilling to listen to anybody else's idea that my professors were. I mean, I'm pushing 48. I was about 46 when I took these classes. I'm in a class with a bunch of 20-year-olds, and they didn't know any better. And I'm sitting there listening to what these people are saying, these professors are saying. And, you know, I spoke up a couple of times, and they did not want to hear a thing about how much bullshit they were spewing. So in answer to your second part, there's no way.
Give me an example.
To be honest, off the top of my head, I do not remember. It was one professor, one of the classes. Well, I'm on your side here, so hold on.
No, I know. That's what I want to hear.
So one of the classes I took was – yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just joking. It sounds exactly like a smoke detector.
No, this place is burning down because I've actually swung to the right so many times. Look,
yeah,
man,
go ahead.
What's
the story?
Here's the thing. Milo, guys like Milo Yiannopoulos exist in many ways to shoot down left-wing ideas, and I'm totally fine with that. He's kind of a flamethrower, but you have to understand, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the Trump situation, and it kind of leads into it. For a year and a half, however long it's been since Trump decided to run, conservatives, right-wingers, Republicans have all been saying the same thing, and they've been bragging about it. Donald Trump is reimagining and redoing and remolding the way American politics are done. The old way is dead. He goes on Twitter and says what he wants. He speaks directly to the people. He cuts out the mainstream media. He says it like it is. He's going to screw the Muslims. We're going to lock through. Sometimes, you know, they send some decent Mexicans. Most of them are rapists and drug dealers. And I grabbed her by the pussy. Whoa, he's so cool. And you know what? John McCain's not a winner. He's a loser because he got caught. I don't celebrate losers. He got away with all this shit. He's reimagining the way American politics are done and the way people do it.
What are you talking about?
And yet, what do you mean, what am I talking about? I listen to all these people say Donald Trump is the new wave of politics.
I know. How does it tie in with my topic?
This ties in with your topic by me saying, A, if you're going to shoot shit out of your mouth and flames out of your ass for a year and a half and say this is the way things are done, you need to expect, and I'm not condoning the violence, but you need to expect that the response to your bullshit might be bigger and better bullshit. Milo Yiannopoulos wants to come out and say that rape culture is bullshit like leprechauns, and he wants to troll Leslie Jones, and he wants to say all this shit about Muslims and what's his other big thing? A couple of other things. I have a couple of his quotes sitting in front of me. But you want to spew shit like that, and you want to tell people this is the way things are going to be done, fuck your feelings, then you have to understand the response is going to be equal or possibly even greater to what you did. And I think that's what happened at Berkeley.
Right. The response by barbarians is always going to be greater. Just like when Salman Rushdie wrote a book that millions of Muslims didn't like and they put a fatwa out on him. That doesn't justify it, saying, oh, well, you know, if you say that the left is unreasonable, then we'll burn down a building. We'll throw things through glass. They're threatening violence because somebody points out how unreasonable some of their ideas are. I think the left needs to come out firmly for the freedom of speech. And here, for example, is an anarchist website called It's Going Down. And they've tweeted out, talking about the Milo thing, the left ignores us, the right demonizes us. That's exactly right. And the left needs to demonize these barbarians just like the right is if it wants to have any credibility as far as free speech goes.
Once again, it's hard for me, and again, I will say that I don't necessarily agree with the violence, but I will say when you keep upping the game, whether it's verbally or not, eventually that verbal stuff is going to tilt over into violence. It's the same thing with growing
right,
up when you're a kid.
The left can say whatever it wants, and it's never been shut down by the right. Can you think of one speaker, no matter how far they go? Bill Maher called Sarah Palin a cunt TV show. Was he stopped from speaking at any university in this country or any comedy club? The right doesn't shut people up. The left does, and that makes the left a far greater danger to the First Amendment than the right.
You have a point about that? Hold on. Okay. Now,
you're kicking my butt this week.
It's fine, man. You're making some... It's either you're making some good arguments or I'm a lot more flexible than you are. We have about 90 seconds. We kind of went a little bit too far with the other topic. This is a 30-minute show. But I don't think the violence is a good thing, but I think eventually, and I'm going to say this one last thing, when we were kids, we would go back and forth. Where I grew up, you had to be verbally competent, where you get your ass kicked verbally. And we would go back and forth. But at some point, and this isn't a conservative or a liberal thing, somebody said something to the other kid that got them punched in the face. And unfortunately, I don't know, one more thing. Condoleezza Rice was supposed to speak at a college, and they stopped her from speaking, which I thought was an abomination. She's a strong, successful black woman who was the Secretary of State, the provost or the chancellor at Stanford. She was in line to be the commissioner of baseball in the major leagues, and they shut that woman down, which I thought was bullshit. Milo? Yeah, you know what? A couple of burning buildings. I think I'm okay with that. Listen, Adam, great show, man. I really appreciate you coming on. And it's been great.
Thank you for having me, Howie.
You're welcome. And to play you out, I'm going to play some music. And I want to thank you all for listening. The name of the show is The Big Picture. I'm going to be back in the next couple of days, whatever. But check it out. Y'all have a great day.
We We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our